What's up, everybody? You are listening to Switch Flicks, the podcast where we love and hate movies at the same time. I'm your host, Omar, and I'm here with my favorite prophet from another planet. Haysom. Haysom, how's it going?
You know, I think that my girlfriend...
Okay.
She was a nomad, lived in the desert for a very long
time. Wow, okay.
Yeah. I'm not sure, but I think this is true because she can remain dry for days.
The rules of the podcast are simple. Haysom and I review something. One of us will have to love it. One of us will have to hate it. And who does what will be determined by the flip of a coin.
The coin of fate.
The coin of fate?
The coin of fate.
The catch is that at any point in our debate, we can use the switch to change positions. So if you loved it, you now hate it. And if you hated it, you now love it. Spoilers, as always. Today, we are reviewing Dune Part 1. Let us begin with our patented one-breath synopsis. Here we go. Dune, titled on screen as Dune Part 1, is a 2021 American epic science fiction film directed by Denis Villeneuve. It is the first of a planned two-part adaptation of the 1965 novel of the same name by Frank Herbert, primarily covering the first half of the book in the far future of humanity. Duke Leto Atreides accepts the stewardship of a dangerous desert planet, Arrakis, also known as Dune, the only source of the most valuable substance in the universe, melange known as spice, a drug that extends human life, provides superhuman levels of thought, and makes faster than light level particle. Though Leto knows the opportunity is an intricate trap set by his enemies, he takes his Bene Gesserit concubine, Lady Jessica, young son Paul, and heir Paul, the most trusted advisors to Arrakis. Leto takes control of the spice mining operation, which is made perilous by the presence of giant sandworms. A bitter betrayal leads Paul and Jessica to the Fremen. Natives of Arrakis who live in the deep desert.
And that's just what happens in the first half of the film.
Oh my god, oh my god.
I'm now about to flip the coin of fate. If it lands on heads, you love Dune Part 1. If it lands on tails, you hate it. Here goes nothing. Heads.
I love it.
You love Dune Part 1. Swift.
Literally the most epic sci-fi movie of all time. Literally the best piece of sci-fi filmmaking I have ever seen. Dune Part 1 just leaves me excited about what's to come. I cannot wait for the conclusion of this story. Denis Villeneuve has created a masterpiece.
Been there, Dune that.
What?
This is just a retread of every science fiction and fantasy trope put on screen.
This is the origin of science fiction and fantasy tropes.
And I think, you know, you're right. This movie is a masterpiece, but it's just a prologue. I can't wait what's going to come next because it hasn't even started. This movie isn't even a part one. It's like in Star Wars, they have like the pre-screen text before they start a movie. That's what this film feels like. It is incomplete. It's not a film. It's nothing. It's, you know, they call it part one. I doubt it's going to make a part two. This movie is completely unsatisfying.
You know, this is a film that is part one, yes, and it needs its part two. It is, the story has to be completed, and that's okay. You know, we don't have to have the full story in one film. We are now waiting for the conclusion of it. This is a perfect part one. You know, this is the setup for the next film, and that's great because it gives us so much. If they tried to cram everything into this movie and make it all in like 2.5 hours, this epic story would have felt shortchanged.
This movie is just exposition and it is setting the table. It's not a film. It's not satisfying. You know, maybe part two comes out and we see the full story and then I'll say, wow, what a great film. But the movie, what we saw as it is not a film. Like, it's just, like, it's like reading the back of a book, like, telling us what's going to happen
it's
next.
It's a setup. It's, you're meeting the characters. You're learning about the lore of the place. You're seeing the incredible visuals. You're experiencing the brutal betrayal of the family. You're setting up who the characters are and where they're going. I mean, this is so delicately handled by Denis Villeneuve.
What I'm left with is this film that is just, you know, it's like a fluffer.
It's a fluffer.
Right?
It's just, so did you get hard?
It's a movie that's fluffing me.
But there was no release.
Right? It's cock tease, right? It's a cock tease. And it's like, maybe 4 years from now, you'll get to finish.
Well, you know what the problem with you is that you're so used to like your TikTok and your Insta stories and your lack of attention span that you don't have the mental capacity to actually appreciate something of this scale, and you have no patience.
You keep talking about the scale of this film. You're right. This is an epic story, which is why it should have been a TV show. That's what this movie needed to be, to really be able to explore what this film is.
Well,
the
great
stories.
Thing is that there is a TV series spinoff that's never going to come.
Promises.
Like the fluffer situation.
Yes. It all comes back to the fluffer situation.
Let us just say that as far as the sci-fi element of this film is concerned, this has set a new bar for sci-fi films in general. The visualization of the mechanisms of these futuristic empire, the spaceships, the weaponry, the suits, the look and feel of it is just beyond imagination.
Switch.
It feels like it's beyond the imagination of a child. If a child had drawn these pictures and then turned them into something visual that you could put on screen, maybe. But you know what? The fact is that all of this is just stolen. It's stolen from manga. Yeah. Okay, it's all stolen from, like, you know, anime. You know, we've seen these types of things before. We've seen, you know, big spaceships shooting rockets and stuff. I mean, it's nothing to get excited about.
This film is completely awe-inspiring in its design and its conception. It brings to life Frank Herbert's epic, incredible vision. We see things that we have never seen before. There are shots in this scene that literally made me cry just from, like, how the scale of it and how beautiful it was. I cry.
Yeah, but you cry easily. You cry at everything. I mean, I literally, like, I will just, I will say, hey, Sam, are you having a bad hair day? You cry. You know? Hey, Sam, you know, what's this sweater you're wearing?
Wow.
You know? You will cry.
It's brand new.
You're crying. Yeah, no. You're crying right now. So my point is that beyond the sci-fi element of it, all right, the cast is just terrible, right? Who chooses to have these, you know, infantile, incapable actors.
Incapable
actors coming in. Oh, they're big Hollywood names. Oh, who cares?
Oh, my God.
You know, they were just trying to attach big names to the film so that people will come and see it, to fool them into coming and seeing it.
Timothée Chalamet.
What kind of a name is Timothée?
It is perfect. He's perfectly cast. Okay, Timothée
his
Chalamet.
Jaw. It's all about his, just because he has a jaw that is like a perfect
jaw
freaking
dropping
triangle.
He's jaw dropping. Chalamet.
Chalamet. I have some.
I have some. Okay, he should call me by his name. Oh. Okay, that's what
should
I want.
Call you Timothée.
He's beautiful. He is.
So that's it. So he looks. He looks nice.
He's so talented. He's an up and coming talented
all
actor.
All he does is mumble the entire film. I'm so upset at everything that is happening.
And the rest of the cast, right? We have Jason Momoa.
Jason Momoa, what a joke! Aquaman coming in to.
You know, actors aren't just the character that they play, right?
He's not. Aquaman coming in to
Aquaman
play
in
Dune.
The desert.
Yes, like, it doesn't make sense, right? You're playing underwater in one movie and now you're in the desert in another. I mean, it's just very confusing.
He was, this role was tailor-made for him. He's perfectly cast. The action that he, the physicality that he brings to this performance is beautiful.
Like, they did a better job casting in the 1984 version. Sting should have been in this film.
That's like, ridiculous. Okay, you're comparing Sting to Oscar Isaac in this film, right?
Oscar Isaac and his beard. Oh, look at me. I've got a beard now. I'm a professional actor.
This movie is like front to back filled with stalwarts of their profession.
Stalwarts.
Right,
stalwarts.
Oscar Isaac brings such a presence to this film, and the guy—I don't know who plays the bad guy in this film.
Stellan Skarsgård.
Stellan Skarsgård. He's unrecognizable.
Exactly.
The makeup.
He's just put in a fat suit. That's Stellan Skarsgård in a fat suit.
What a creepy, disgusting performance. Like, perfect. And he's such an intimidating figure.
They did it better. David Lynch did it better, okay? David Lynch just nailed it the first time around. I honestly don't know why they didn't just follow his vision. You know, Stellan Skarsgård in this film, he's just dour and he's you know, he's just very, like, you know, slimy. And, you know, in the original, he was manic, you know, the Baron was nuts. He was crazy. He had warts on his face, you know, like, why didn't they do that?
I think what they did with his character, with his costumes, with the world building, right? This film has the best world building I think I've ever seen in any film ever.
Oh, because it's based on a book that already had the world built. So they just literally took what was already there, took some anime references and put it together.
It is such a dense and original world that has been created, and just putting that on screen is a feat on its own. It is full of such interesting ideas, like, for example, the suit, the
still suit?
Yes, where you see the blue and the red, and the way that it is communicated.
Oh,
you're talking
about the shields.
The shields, yes.
Right, the shields.
The way it's communicated onto the screen, visually and thematically.
Doesn't even compare to the original 1984 version. What I want to see when I see a shield, I want to literally see a mirror covering the person completely. Okay? I don't want to see some little blue flicker or red flicker. You know, what is that? What kind of a shield is that?
Huh? You know? Are you really comparing this?
100, to absolutely. The original and best version that then he pulled it off in one movie. Wow. You don't need two movies.
He made a 5-hour movie that was then cut down by the studios. He's disowned that film. David Lynch doesn't like that film. How can you say that it's a good movie?
We know David Lynch has lost his mind. Okay? We know that. All right? All I'm saying is that this was an unsuccessful attempt to recreate the magic of the original film.
Switch.
The original film, which we shall never speak of again, was a misfire, you know? And thank God that Denis Villeneuve has come back and been able to rework the epic story of Dune into something that we have today. You know, we were talking about the incredible cast that was just so perfectly chosen, you know, for this film. You know, Dave Bautista coming back in for another collaboration with Denis Villeneuve. You know, you had, like, you just had an incredible.
You mean Dave Batata?
Dave Batata.
Okay.
Dave Batata.
We don't need him in this film.
Right. And then we're talking about just Denis Villeneuve's visual treatment, even beyond the science fiction, you know, just the poetic language that he uses to cut between, you know, the dream state and the mystical and the real.
It's confusing. It's what it is, okay?
How's it confusing?
It's confusing because what's real, what's fake, everything's just a mishmash of cultures, just
a
like...
mishmash.
Denis Villeneuve. Is he French? Is he from Montreal?
Yes, he's from Montreal.
It doesn't make sense. Okay, you're either French or you're Canadian. You can't be French Canadian.
Okay? Of course, you can be French Canadian.
And that's what this movie does. That's what Denis Villeneuve. What are these names? Okay, stupid names? Okay, call him by a different name.
Villeneuve. Okay? It means new city, and he's created a new city.
It means villain now, because he's now a villain who's created this terrible vision of the future, okay? But, sorry, you were saying something.
I was saying that if you were having trouble distinguishing between the dream states and the waking states, it's just because, you know, of your intellectual inferiority. It's not because of the fact that the movie was confusing at all.
No, because the movie...
This is a movie whose story progresses around a character who is literally set to be the most powerful creature in the universe.
I didn't get that from this movie because this movie doesn't get
they
there.
They say that like a million times.
This movie has it doesn't go anywhere. Oh, by the way, let's talk about all the Arab imagery in this film, by
Absolutely.
The way. Okay,
beautiful how references.
All the culture appropriation that they bring into this film, it is disgusting. I'm surprised this movie isn't banned in the UAE. It needs to be banned in the Middle East.
Well, first of all, let me tell you something.
Okay.
Initially in the book, what there's literally they talk about the jihad.
Yes.
In the book. In the book, you know, the holy war that they predict will be happening to wrest control of the galaxy from the empire is called the jihad, right? And in order to make it more accessible to the public, they removed the word jihad and put holy war.
Wow.
You know? No. So they've been extremely sensitive about the way that the Arabic cultural appropriation would be handled.
The Arabs in this movie are savages who live in
the
desert.
They're not savages at all. They're an extremely sophisticated civilization that is connected to their land. They are extremely respectable and they're great fighters.
That's all they are. They're fighters and they have to live in the sand. And, you know, they need this white savior prophet guy to come and show them the way.
Oh, so now we're going to be talking about the white savior prophet? Is that what we're
that's
talking
what
about?
The movie
he's
is.
Not a white savior prophet.
He's the most powerful white being in the world.
He's just because he happens to be white. You can't be racist. Why are you so racist against white people?
In the movie, he literally, they're like, we know everything about the desert. But then he, being this white guy, magically knows everything there is to know
it's
about the desert.
It's because he's been genetically bred over centuries. He's not just some random white guy.
How is that supposed to sound less racist?
Look, the point is that this
he's just
was
genetically superior
he's
to
not
them.
Genetically superior to them at all. He's the product of careful breeding by the Bene Gesserit in order to create the supreme being,
Like an Aryan. He's part of the Aryan race.
He's not an Aryan. No, he's not. He is not about his skin tone or his skin color.
Sure.
It is about who he. It's not about his whiteness. It's about his heart. Okay, his internalness.
Because
okay?
Arabs are savages who don't have
no,
hearts.
No, but this is not at all. Switch. Just switch. Switch.
This film is such a great allegory about what people think of the Arab world. It's an allegory about, the Gulf War. It's an allegory about what's happening with oil, with all the empire coming to the Arab world and trying to take it for their own. This movie is spreading the word of what's really happening in the Arab world.
Right. Okay. All right. So you think that this entire film is a political statement?
Absolutely.
That it's just meant to be a statement by Denis Villeneuve about what's happening in the Arab world? How egotistical are you as someone who is not Arab, who lives in the Arab world, if you think that this whole story is just about that? This is about, and it's, by the way, as if it hasn't been done before, Avatar, anyone? Okay. Avatar did it better. Okay. All right. It's an entire planet that is run by blue savages. Okay. All right. Who are they supposed to be representing? Arabs? No, they're representing
Indians.
American Indians, right? So it's just about any colonialist pursuit. Look, it's a low-hanging fruit, right? So please spare me that this is some kind of genius, representation
element,
okay?
There's so much depth that is
going
on.
There's been colonization going on since the British Empire. No, since before that.
Yes.
You know, it's not exactly something new, all right?
It's Denis Villeneuve, if anything, okay? It's brand new the way it is showed.
Fine. Okay, fine. So they're using the trope of the colonizer versus the colonized, as if we don't have enough of that in real life, that we need to go to the movies and watch it and spend more of our time.
Well, we get to watch it in this amazing action-filled spectacle,
action.
Right?
What action?
Oh, are you kidding me?
What action?
This
sci-fi mess.
Okay.
CGI mess.
The way this film is shot is beautiful. Like every shot is moving painting, the way it's choreographed, you actually get to see it. This isn't one of those shaky
cam
films.
Just jumping around, flipping around, and stabbing people. Like, what? I mean, what action? Honestly, like, the action in this film was just blah. It was just muddled. It was messy. It didn't feel substantial.
It felt so substantial. Every different fighter has their own fighting style based on where they come from, and it all comes back to the world that movie has built. Like, the way Jason Momoa fights is different from how the other house fights.
You know what really had great action? Mortal Kombat. That's really the standard that we should be trying to reach over here. This ain't no Mortal Kombat.
Well, you can actually see what the hell is going on in this film in the action sequences. You can see the scale of it. You see the ships, you see the shooting, and it all has an emotional core. That's what's most important.
Oh, you're talking about the emotional core of the story?
Yes.
Oh, okay. So, oh, poor little lost boy. Oh, look at me. Oh, I'm getting visions of things, bad things that may or may not happen.
No.
Oh, I see this girl, and she's so beautiful, and I must go to her. Oh, geez. Oh, come on. Get yourself... Just get it together,
I'm talking Timothy. About the relationships that are central. The betrayal of his house, his relationship with his father.
Oh, you mean Game of Thrones? You know, did it better, right? This movie's just stealing. It's just a thief.
This movie came first.
This movie did not come first.
The book came first.
Books.
Books. Game of Thrones is a book.
So it's based on Macbeth. How about that? There's some betrayal.
Right.
So
I mean, yes, story. What?
It just stole all of the emotional elements from other stories, okay? Greek tragedies did it better. All right? All I'm saying over here, okay, just bear with me. All right, is that this movie sucks because it is essentially just trying to dress up all of these stolen ideas and make it look fancy and look you know, exciting and fun, but really all it is half a movie, you know, and who wants to go see that?
Anybody who's ever watched Lord of the Rings, you know, like anybody who's watched any three of the Lord of the Rings movies, this is how it is, an epic story that's built into chapters. And this chapter has its own beginning. It has its own end. It has its own catharsis. We get to a point where we really want to know what's going to happen next. And, you know, I think that Dune Part 2 is combined with Dune Part 1 might be one of the greatest movies ever made.
And with that, I feel like we have reached the natural conclusion of this debate. Tell me, Haisam, what did you really think?
It's hard to describe how I feel about this film because I absolutely loved it, but I also have a hard time judging it on its own. I think once I watch Part 2, it'll be one of my favorite movies of all time. But right now, it does kind of feel like it's half of an amazing movie.
It's an incomplete film. So let's do it this way. Because we don't have a part two.
Yes.
Judge it as a part one.
But...
As a part one. Like, look, try to look at it as a part one. And I was thinking about this, you know, because, you know, I've gone to see this movie already a couple of times, and I'm going again tonight. This has quickly become one of my favorite movies of all time. I love this film. Even though it's incomplete.
Yes.
Right? Because I have faith that if the second part is anything like the first, knowing the story, you know, that it's going to be just incredible. And I want to get as much of this film in my head on the big screen. You know, I want to see the scale of it as possible. So I'm judging it based on it being a part one, which I know is not an easy thing to do, but I feel like it's a near perfect part one of a two movie, you know, story.
I left the film. I understand what you're saying, right? But I left the film dissatisfied, and I can't shake that feeling, right? I left it partly because it doesn't feel like Lord of the Rings. It doesn't feel like the Fellowship of the Ring because that film had its own beginning, middle, and end. This movie doesn't really have that. It doesn't have like a structure. It doesn't have acts. It just kind of happens.
It's one and a half acts. This film feels like it's not The Fellowship of the Ring, because if I'm not mistaken, and correct me if I'm wrong, the Lord of the Rings trilogy was also, was it a trilogy of books as well?
Yes. Right? So the Lord of the Rings trilogy, it was emotion, like
just in terms of the book, in terms of the source material.
So
I believe that it was
at first when the book was written, it was written as one large book. But then when it was published, they were like, too big. Let's cut it into three parts. So yes, the story Fellowship of the Ring, it's its own book, and they're all at their own book.
Fine. And the way that those stories were structured is that they had conclusions that then led to the next sequence, right? So into the next story. This film, this book, right, needs to be complete, right? Because even the way that it's structured is that this whole first film is the setup. Yes. This is the setup. And it's like you're front loading all of the information and emotion and characters and all of the kind of the betrayal and the characterizations in order for the release to happen in the second movie. And the second movie, I'm really excited about it because I know the level that it's going to reach, you know? Having, you know, read the books, having seen the original movie as well recently, yeah. I rewatched the 1984 version last week, which was just so funny. I mean, it was funny. That you know that what's to come is going to take it just beyond another level, you know? Yes, you're right. If you desire a true sense of conclusion, then you're going to end up feeling like, you know, like you're not going to get that, you know? You end on a cliffhanger. You end on the idea of what's to come.
Yeah. And it's not even a cliffhanger, really. Like, there's no, like, you know what's going to... It's just...
Well, you end on this incredible shot of someone riding the sandworm.
Yes.
You know, you end on the promise of revenge, of vengeance.
Yeah.
You end on the promise of this entire world that is now going to be, you know, laid at his, you know, available. This entire army that's literally going to be available to Paul to seek his vengeance.
I think if I was to simply go like, okay, this is a movie. I'm judging this seriously as like what I saw on screen, right? I would go, the story didn't end. Like it didn't, it started
and
ended.
It's part one. But
what we're watching isn't that. When I watch a movie, I'm watching that movie. And when I watch that movie, I want it to have like some kind of its own, like, you know, it needs
to be...
Part
one naturally needs a part two.
Yes, but...
This is a film that was done not saying, okay, if... This is the thing, is that, you know, movies that are trilogies, for example, a lot of the time, the first movie is a complete film.
Yes.
And then, oh, it does well. Let's do a trilogy, because then more people are going to watch it. This film is a risk.
Yes.
Because it requires the second part. Otherwise, it will never be complete.
And I think... It's not a complete film.
No, and that's why it's called part one.
But what's on there is incredible.
It's incredible. Right? That's what I'm saying. It's incredible.
It is.
It's just stunning.
Right?
It's stunning. It's like a feast for the eyes. The acting is just so beautifully nuanced. The characters are so well developed. They're such great representations of the story of the book. You know, they come to life. Like everybody, in fact, I wanted more. Like there are certain things, there are certain characters like Duncan Idaho in the book. He has so much, he has even more of an emotional connection to Paul. So the way that he dies is even more impactful, you know? So you understand that there are certain things that you can only do so much of, but you still manage to get pretty far. Like I felt like when he was getting, you know, in the midst of battle and he gets, you know, you think he's dead and he rises up again and he attacks again. You feel that like rush of excitement, you know. There's a lot, like Dune was one of those stories that was regarded as being, quote, unfilmable because it's just so vast, right? And no one has come as close to creating the epic nature connected to the emotional aspect of the story And with the visual flair that I've ever seen before.
What's on screen is it really, like when I said I cried from just looking at something, I did tear up multiple, it wasn't even a one-time thing, multiple times I teared up, not because of something was emotional.
It stretches the imagination.
But just because of what I was looking at.
Yeah, like, it's like that this is the visual product of a human imagination, is just to think that things could be at the scale, yeah, that they could function this way. Like,
okay, and the thought put into all of it.
The thought put into it. Like, there's one example, which is a very small example, but it was like a masterclass in storytelling in one moment, right? It's how they explained the way that the shields work, right? One shot. All that happens is that he takes the knife, I think it's Paul, he turns on his shield, he takes the knife and he hits it fast against his arm and it doesn't penetrate. And then he slowly moves it against his arm and it penetrates. And you understand how the shields work.
And it goes red and blue.
And
like
red
it just,
and blue.
That's
you get it.
1 second.
And like for someone to be able to boil down a concept into something so clear and visually distinct, that's a master. That's a master at work.
And that happens over and
that
because,
happens again
because that's
and
what
again
the film is. It's
again
a lot of these concepts that's yes all like being kind of thrown at us, but it all makes sense and it's all functional in this film and you've never seen it before and none of it looks like CGI. Like it all looks like
it does. It all looks so just real.
Like
you
it
know
just does. Like the way it's lit, the way it's shot, the way it's framed, like it doesn't look like you're watching like, you know, like a Marvel film with like CGI characters. It looks like you're watching real people in real place. Like this looks like it's a thing I could walk
into
to, and it would be massive and I would feel like chills like throughout my body, you know.
Yeah.
And even in terms of the kind of the actors, they're so good. They're just good. Like there's you feel it. Like you feel
perfectly cast.
Like you feel like Oscar Isaac is, you
he's
know
so honorable,
right?
Oscar Isaac is Paul Atreides. He's so honorable and he just represents this like sense of he's justice and honor. And when he gets betrayed, you really feel how evil the Baron is. Like the way the Baron is represented, you didn't realize it was Stellan Skarsgård.
No, and he floats and he's this huge. No, I did not, by the way.
So that's amazing, right?
Yeah.
Because he's just transformed. Now the way that it's described in the books is that he's so fat and so overwhelmingly hedonistic that he's become so overweight and so like unhealthy that he cannot walk.
Yeah.
And so he has these anti-gravity devices that make him float around, right? So in the movie, the 1984 version, it's almost done as a kitschy
yeah
thing. It's very like spastic, right? Yeah. In this film, he is so terrifying and so intimidating that when you see him float, you're just like...
When it happens the first time,
yeah,
he's like this large looming creature.
And he has this trail of his robe like hanging down. It's so menacing. Yeah. It's just, how do you capture that tone? How does a film capture that tone so perfectly and make you feel real, like how scared anyone would be in the presence of this evil being.
And the music and the sound mixing, like jazz, everything is just...
The sound, the music.
I couldn't get out of my... But it kind of makes you like feel something.
Yeah, it makes you feel.
It's an epic.
It's an epic.
It feels epic.
Yes.
Right?
Yes,
it feels like this is what cinema is supposed to be. Right? Like Denis Villeneuve is one of my favorite directors
filmmakers
in general. Like
absolutely.
he nails it. Like, and he's not just... I think what's really amazing about him is that he's not like a... Like Zack Snyder is a great visualist, right?
Yes.
But Denis Villeneuve is a great visualist, but he also has emotion and he's
yes
a storyteller. And this he combines both those
yes
things,
yeah,
right? He's like the best of both worlds, I think.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
that this movie really kind of stands out and you can see all of that put
yeah
on screen.
There's a lot of detail and a lot of care and a lot of attention paid to the character interactions and their... And you know, and he relies on the intelligence of the audience to put some things together.
Yes.
Which I really appreciated. Like, for example, even the first time that Paul's mother what's his name?
Rebecca Ferguson?
Yeah, Rebecca Ferguson, the Lady Jessica. The first time she uses her hand signals to communicate.
God, it's cool, man.
It's so cool because there's no hint that it's about to happen, and then you get it fully, you know?
And then they use it throughout.
And then they use it throughout, you know, when she wants to be secretive. And then the idea of the voice, voice is used, it's just, you know, it really gets to you, the feeling of the voice, the way that it was visually and sonically translated, the way that the picture gets cut when the voice is used, that time almost disappears and the character just moves into a new position because they've been forced into it by the use of the voice, you know? There are so many techniques that were like expertly used to make this world happen while still maintaining the emotional weight of it, you know? And so it's just, it's a feat and a feast for the eyes as well, you know? So I absolutely love Dune. I can't wait for the second part. I'm so happy that it's doing well financially because it feels like that's going to...
I still feel like we're not going to get a part two.
I think you just don't want to be disappointed. That's why.
I think you just don't want to set yourself up for disappointment. Like at least.
I mean, look, I know that they want to start working on it next year.
Yeah.
You know, they're hoping to get the green light to do so. And... you know, I don't know. You know, you're actually a bit better about like box office things and kind of figuring out like you know the technicalities of the industry. But even if we have to wait like 3 years or whatever for it, you know, I just want it to get made. Yeah.
It's a very expensive film. It's made around $100 million so far internationally.
But without domestic, American domestic.
But that's about, it's released everywhere pretty much domestically at this point. And right now, I think last week it made around $13 million internationally. So maybe it goes up to like 140, 150 overall. Then we have its domestic thing. We don't know how much it's going to make, but
probably
let's say it. You know more than if it makes like Blade Runner 2050 numbers, then that's a failure.
It's got so much word of mouth. It's got so much.
It feels like such a kind of a niche film. Like it's not.
But you would think that it's a niche film, but. People are seeing it. People are going and watching it.
I think it's just kind of it. I think it is much more for us than like a general kind of audience who wants to go. And so I don't know how it's going to do. Right? Like Blade Runner was like that too. Everybody's like, "Oh my god!" So
Blade Runner was beautiful,
and it didn't do well. Like it didn't do well at all. Right?
Yeah, but also Blade Runner was not. I feel like. Even though Dune had the 1984 version, everybody forgot about that, right? Yes. Nobody really cared about it. So Dune feels new. It feels fresh to most people, right? Yeah. Blade Runner 1984 did feel, I think, for a lot of people like, oh, it's a sequel. It's a, you know, so maybe it just didn't, it wasn't as attractive in that sense. But, you know, you and I both know that that film did have a major impact on you know, the sci-fi filmmaking world. Yes. And it's been, you know, it set a new visual standard and everything. So I don't know. Look, I can't predict what's going to happen in terms of the box office for this film. But it's such a huge risk because it needs part two. If this film doesn't get a part two, then it'll never be.
It'll be the biggest disappointment.
Such a huge disappointment.
Like I wish like they did it like The Lord of the Rings, where they just shot both movies at once, and then they were like, okay, we're going to release it, right?
But I don't know why. Like why, you know, I guess it's the cost, it's the money.
I think it is, because it is a risk. And I think just the fact that they were like, no, just make the first one, we'll see how it goes. They haven't greenlit the other film yet, you know, like all that just makes me go like, what's going to, I don't trust
Warner Brothers.
you don't
trust Warner Brothers,
right? They're gonna make the next Space Jam.
But then you gotta remember, this is the thing, you know, like for God's sake, you know, like take the money of Space Jam and put it into Dune, you know. Screw Space Jam, that movie was complete garbage and really just meant nothing. This film is art, it's so beautiful. Yeah,
Space Jam made more money than Dune, and it cost less.
Disgusting, right? It's horrible.
That's the thing. So I go like, okay, well, they haven't greenlit it, like Free Guy, they greenlit that a sequel like 2 days after it released, you know?
Yeah.
Like over here, I'm like, okay, what's going to happen?
But Free Guy was released domestically.
Yes,
this has not been released domestically.
It has not.
I think they are waiting for that as well. And I imagine that this cost more than Free Guy, right?
Much more.
So that's also a big part of it.
Yeah, so it's, you know, this is at least a $200-something million. If they're making another movie, like, it's going to cost, like... Like, I think that I'm afraid that they're going to be like, okay, you know, let's make another one, but you get half the budget to do it. Like, you know,
they
like
can't. They have to do it the same way. They can't. And that's the thing is that, you know...
like, it made money, but it didn't make enough money for us to make
But we
you
also
go.
Have to remember one thing, is that they are planning a much broader approach for this.
Yeah.
There, from my understanding, if I recall correctly, there is also a series coming
out, right? It's
still rumored.
This
is
what they said about the Dark Towers. You know, they made the Dark Towers.
Yeah, but the Dark
film.
Tower was so bad.
Well, that's. But they're like, okay, you know,
that
Dark
was, that was very bad.
But like, you know, in terms of, you know, it is this epic science fiction story that spans.
You mean Stephen King?
Stephen King's Dark Tower, right?
But it didn't even relate to the book. Like, it was such a mess. It was so bad.
But what I mean is, like, that is in. You can relate it in terms of it's a giant book series that is beloved by many people that has like this story, and then when they were creating it, they're like, okay, we're gonna create a whole series of this, we're gonna make the first movie, we're gonna make a TV show that's a spin-off, that's like this other stuff. And then, you know, that movie came out and it's terrible.
Yeah.
I didn't actually watch it, but I've heard it. Because I've heard it's so terrible.
So bad.
It's terrible. It didn't make any money, and so they were like, okay, scrap everything, right? And so anyway, you know,
look, the fact of the matter is, you know, it's a wait and see situation.
Yes.
But until then, I'm going tonight to watch it again. So, you know.
How many sandworms would you give this on a scale of 1 to 10?
Man, I mean, it's just near perfect. You know, as far as the part one is concerned, I would give it a 9.7.
I'm gonna have to rate this in a weird way. I think that once part two comes out and I watch that movie, this will be a 10 out of 10.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is a 10 out of 10
yeah.
once part two comes
yeah.
out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right now, for me, it's like a 8.
Because it's not
or
complete.
Like a 7.9, like 8. Because like, I'm like...
Where's the rest of it?
I like, it's not, I have absolutely...
I'm
even
rating
have,
it as a part one. I'm not rating it as a complete
I think even as a part one, it... If it is a part one, then it's a failure of what, in my head, a part one is. Like, this feels like it is the first half of the first season of Game of Thrones. Like, you know, done to its absolute best possible, in the best possible way. But it's still
incomplete.
It's still incomplete.
Yeah.
And
It's basically like, it's kind of like... It's kind of like what you said.
It's a fluffer.
It's a fluffer.
Right.
It's like where's the release?
Right.
Where's the satisfaction? You know,
you gave me
such a hard on,
like the hardest hard on I have ever had. And then you
and
left and
balls.
Said, maybe 4 years later I'll finish this,
or maybe
you know?
Two,
right?
Maybe two. You know, they are saying it might be released in 2023. So
I think that I'll tell you this. I think this movie is so good that I have no doubt that when part two comes out, that
It'll,
movie will be a 10
yeah,
out of 10
yeah.
and this will be a 10 out of 10.
10.
That's
yeah,
how good
yeah,
this
yeah,
film is.
So
but
good.
As it stands, for me, it's like a 7.9 and 8.
I understand what you're saying. But, you know, I feel like... I don't think you can rate a movie that way. You know?
But you have to rate it as the thing that you saw. Right, and when I watch a movie, what I am looking for
but it's
is
still, but how is it? But this is what I'm trying to say is that this movie is not complete without part two. It never tried to be complete without part two.
Yes.
It's not failing at not being complete.
But
you know
I
what I mean? So why does it lose points?
I think you can still tweak it to make it feel satisfying. I think that there are movies that do
it,
right?
I
can't think of any other movie that's a part one that's just. Like that's like this. Like
but
I can't think of a single movie
this
like
is,
this.
This is a story that I mean, I'm trying to think of a movie or a story that's similar to that. But it is literally half the book.
Yes,
you know. So because it's like half the story,
yeah. like
you know, it doesn't have a conclusion.
For
it has
example,
a dot dot dot.
It
you know?
Chapter one, right? That's one book that they. But that chapter one feels like okay, it's a movie. You know?
Yeah, but that's because It Chapter 1 was about their lives as kids. And then
yes.
It Chapter 2 is their lives as adults. And that was always that always worked as two separate films.
Yes.
You know, that always worked as two separate stories because they had a conclusion. They defeated it, you
yes.
know? And in this movie, this is the setup for the rest of the
for
film.
For the movie. Like,
yeah.
So it's... so if I was to judge it just as a movie, then I can't give it points because what the things that I'm looking for is
I see what you're saying. Like, I see what you're saying. I do get what you're saying. And I think there, you know, that is the frustration that some people have also noted upon leaving the film.
Yeah.
Is that where's the payoff?
Yes.
Right? Well, the payoff is part two. I know. And you gotta wait.
Right.
So I really hope that it gets made. Thank you for listening to Switch Flicks. If you loved or hated the show, please do rate, subscribe, and leave some comments. Your support is the quid sat sadarach of our soul.